A simple mistranslation in Cairo, women's center, becoming center for sluts, captures something profound about Arab sexuality today. One misplaced vowel reveals how language itself has become a minefield, where even discussing women's issues risks moral condemnation. Yet, beneath the surface of silence, a fascinating paradox emerges. The same region that once produced explicit erotic encyclopedias now confines sexuality strictly within marriage. How did the culture that gave us detailed medieval sex manuals become one where young people can't even ask basic questions about their bodies? This isn't just about prudishness or religious conservatism. 5 years of research across the Arab world reveals that bedrooms function as mirrors, reflecting deeper political, economic, and social realities. The same authoritarian structures that governed nations for decades also governed bodies and desires. When protesters filled Tahrir Square demanding freedom, they were rebelling against systems that controlled not just their votes, but their most intimate choices: whom to love, when to marry, how to express desire. Picture Gustave Flaubert wandering through 1849 Cairo, documenting explicit encounters with prostitutes and bawdy street life. Now imagine an Egyptian scholar in 1826 Paris, praising France's strict homosexuality laws while criticizing their lax attitudes toward mixed-gender socializing. These journeys capture history's strangest reversals, East and West essentially trading sexual places. During Islam's Golden Age, Arab scholars wrote frankly about sexuality with sophistication that wouldn't appear in Western literature for centuries. The 11th century Encyclopedia of Pleasure covered virtually every sexual practice, emphasizing female pleasure, foreplay, and cunnilingus, remarkably progressive even today. Napoleon's 1798 invasion triggered what Egyptians call foreigner complex, deep inferiority toward the West. Colonial powers introduced formal prostitution regulations, while missionaries condemned local customs. The Muslim Brotherhood, founded in 1920s Egypt, channeled this anxiety into religious conservatism. Later, Sayyid Qutb, whose ideas influenced Al-Qaeda, developed anti-Western views after visiting 1940s America, appalled by its sexual licentiousness. Today's conservatism reflects decades of dictatorship. When political expression was crushed, people turned to Islam for solace and protest. Wilhelm Reich argued sexual repression creates individuals adjusted to the authoritarian order, who submit despite misery and degradation, perhaps explaining Egyptians' long tolerance of poor governance. Marriage dominates Arab society as the sole legitimate space for sexuality, with over 90% of Egyptians viewing it as essential. The Arabic linguistic link between marriage, nikah, and intercourse underscores this. Outside matrimony, sexual relations constitute zina, illicit relations with severe penalties. Modern marriage reveals stark contradictions. Aza, university-educated and earning triple her husband's salary, still faces bedroom problems and conflicting expectations. Like many Egyptian women, she benefits from education and legal rights while remaining constrained by patriarchy, reinforced by Islamic conservatism. Despite anxiety about declining marriage rates, reality is nuanced. While rates fell by a third between the 1950s and mid-2000s, about 90% of Egyptians still marry by 35. The real shift is timing. Men now average 29, women 24, about 3 years later than young people consider optimal. This waithood extends across the region, driven by economics, requiring about 7 years of savings for the poorest. When official marriage becomes unattainable, couples turn to urfi marriage, simplified arrangements maintaining Islamic permissibility while circumventing financial barriers. Though religiously debated, women have no rights to support, inheritance, or recognition. Yet for couples desperate for intimacy and religious legitimacy, these represent the only compromise between desire and social reality. Despite her pioneering research on sexuality in Islam, counselor Hiba Kotbud remains conservative. While encouraging women to claim their sexual rights, she ultimately prioritizes men's needs, advising wives to be available to please him and not give husbands a reason to make a choice between you and hellfire. This contrasts with classical Arabic literature's openness, works that portrayed women with robust appetites and emphasized female pleasure. Today's Arab female writers continue that tradition. Lebanese poet Jumana Haddad launched Jasad, meaning body, in 2008, a glossy quarterly exploring sexuality through essays and art. For ordinary women like Aza, seeking sexual advice remains difficult without English skills, money for specialists, or internet access. Many Egyptian women avoid tampons due to virginity concerns and fear touching their genital area even after marriage. Yet they enthusiastically embrace lingerie. Downtown Cairo's boutiques offer provocatively outlandish undergarments purchased even by hijab-wearing women. Lingerie becomes one of few available tools for sexual expression and keeping husbands faithful. Heterosexual anal intercourse emerges as a significant marital issue. Despite being generally considered haram, forbidden, by Sunni Muslims, the practice continues. Egyptian migrant workers in Gulf countries appear to bring back changed sexual practices, with some men manipulating religious fatwas to justify these behaviors. For women like Aza, these demands create painful dilemmas: submit to unwanted acts or risk their marriages. In post-uprising Egypt, Tahrir Square briefly dissolved traditional boundaries as young people manned barricades, smoked hashish openly, and displayed public affection. With nearly 100 million Arabs aged 15 to 29, representing almost a third of the region's population, their intimate lives remained largely hidden despite public political grievances. Marwa Raqqa, Egypt's agony aunt for the online generation, reveals that boyfriend-girlfriend relationships are common in middle-class Cairo, with men testing women's sexual boundaries while expecting virginity. Technology, from adult friend finder to Bluetooth flirtation in Saudi malls, gives youth unprecedented privacy despite family surveillance. Female virginity remains critical, with religious authorities divided on hymen repair surgery. Sexual harassment pervades Egyptian streets. Over half of young urban women report experiencing it, blamed on unemployed youth with sexual frustration and no marriage prospects. Remarkably, most women themselves believe provocatively dressed women invite harassment, despite 90% wearing modest clothing. This victim blaming reveals how deeply patriarchal attitudes have been internalized, creating a culture where women police each other's behavior while men's actions remain unquestioned. With schools offering minimal sexual education and parents reluctant to discuss intimacy, many young Egyptians turn to television, movies, and pornography, despite explicit content's illegality. Sahar Talat offers an alternative, teaching young Arabs about sexuality within an Islamic framework. In her Doha classroom, she presents anatomical information, dispels wedding night fears, and encourages sexual communication, a stark contrast to frightening messages students receive from family or online. For youth engaging in premarital sex, protection is as scarce as information. Contraceptives cost just $2.50 in Egypt, but knowledge about proper usage is lacking. Though discussed in classical Arabic texts, contraception is now viewed primarily as female responsibility, creating stigma for unmarried women who plan ahead. Tunisia stands alone in the Arab world, providing legal abortion on request for women 18 or older up to the first trimester without spousal consent. This 40-year-old policy has proven successful. Rates have declined from 20,000 annually in the late 1970s to about 15,000 today. In Egypt, abortion is widespread yet illegal. Wealthy women pay $500 for safe procedures at private clinics, while poor women resort to dangerous methods like drinking boiled onion tea or inserting plant stocks. Morocco offers a potential path forward. Dr. Shafiq Tribi, who founded AMLAC after witnessing complications from botched procedures, strategically pushes for softening laws to permit terminations in cases of rape, incest, minors, fetal malformation, or dire social situations, framing reform in ways that might gain religious and political acceptance. Egypt's fundamental problem isn't the laws themselves, but their implementation. Decades of emergency law created a chilling effect on sexuality and society. Real reform requires transforming law enforcement, the judiciary, and how ordinary people view law as protection rather than control. Education needs complete overhaul to foster critical thinking, especially regarding religion. Economic reform is equally crucial. Less uncertainty might temper stringent Islam's appeal and ease family stress. What's urgently needed is a coherent, positive intellectual framework for sexuality, one accommodating both religion and science, transforming sex from a problem into a source of pleasure and creativity. Despite fears that political upheaval might restrict freedoms further, there's reason for optimism. The 2011 protests showed the uprising was political, not religious. Unlike the West, where sexual revolution coincided with declining church influence, the Arab world's path will differ. Sexual rights can exist within an Islamic framework when people have freedom to think for themselves. The same region that once celebrated sexuality as divine gift can reclaim that heritage through gradual sexual reevaluation, where people reconsider their sexual past, present, and future. When political freedom extends to personal freedom, when economic security allows young people to marry without crushing debt, when education teaches critical thinking, then the fortress walls will crumble through countless small openings, each one expanding until what once seemed impregnable becomes simply a relic of a more fearful time.